Hi, this is Sandra Roscoe Wolf, culture agent columnist for LB Post.
And I'm Larry Bott. I'm the former director of Gallery 117.
Well, that's why we're here today. We wanted to talk a little bit about your work as the director of Gallery 117 and what led you to become the former director. Why don't you start a little bit at the beginning of what your original idea was?
Sure. Well, I'm an artist craftsman. I do furniture and woodworking and sculpture. And I was interested in finding an outlet for my pieces. I had put a lot of things out in consignment and would go to look at them and find they were in the back room. And we had been to a really fine cooperative gallery in Mendocino that was primarily a crafts gallery. And I just got the idea that a cooperative gallery would be the thing to do in the beginning arts district in the East Village.
And at that time, this was, what, like 15 years ago?
Well, I think it's about 12. Oh, I was thinking back, and I believe we're coming to our 13th year.
Oh, okay. So at that time, what was the landscape like?
Well, it was mainly empty storefronts, the bums sleeping in the doorway, a lot of empty buildings. Crime was not as bad as it had been, but it was still a pretty violent, scary area, mm-hmm. frankly.
And so, I mean, other than the affordable rent, I mean, and the concept of an arts district, what really drew you to locating there?
Well, you're sitting in my house now, and this was a piece of property that I owned since 1978, and we saw the area going down, getting really bad, and I was approached by Phil Appleby and other people to get on a committee, a steering committee, to look into the possibility of turning this area into an arts district. And being an artist, that whetted my appetite. I thought that was really a great idea. And just living about two blocks from Mola and right close to the ocean, it seemed like the perfect thing. And it was hard for me to imagine that this area would be so bad and yet be so close to the ocean. And at any rate, I worked with the steering committee for 2 years, and we put together a guide for the development of the East Village that was accepted by the city, and we put in our various ideas of what we thought an arts district should be, and one of the things was artist live work lofts, and one of the first things myself and Phil Appleby did was get an artist live work loft on 7th Street across from St. Anthony's High School. Actually, we bought an old building and had it turned into an artist live work loft. And shortly after that, we got the idea of forming the cooperative gallery, and a space became available on Linden Avenue, and we started out there in just about a fourth of the size of the building, and slowly but surely over the years we just took on more and more of the property until we took on this whole little segment of rooms that really at one time was a doctor's office, and the little rooms were examining rooms.
Oh, okay, so, that makes sense.
And other people were renting them out at that time, and as they would leave, we would take over another one and knock a wall down, and pretty soon the gallery is what we have today, which is about 1,200 square feet, thereabouts. Mm-hmm. And then we, slowly but surely, we ended up taking over the entire space and then renting out some of the smaller spaces to other artists.
So at that early period, you had the idea of doing this cooperative gallery. How many artists did you think would be required to keep it sort of self-sustaining?
Well, we always, at the beginning, we were able to get by with, I think, 5 artists, and that they were charged. At times, they had to pay as much as $200 a month, mm-hmm. to keep the thing going. We finally arrived at about $117 a month, which just happened to be the same address that we had, and happened to be the name of the gallery.
Oh, that's great.
So it, in order for the gallery itself to pay for itself, we need 10 artists, and then the other little rooms had to be rented out for approximately $350 a month. And by doing all of that, the place paid for itself.
And that also enabled each artist to have a solo show once a year.
Exactly.
And then you had two shows. What were they?
Well, we've had invitational shows. We've had various invitational mm-hmm. shows. We did some things with students at City College in the sculpture department, and that was a really successful show. We had another invitational show where we ended up getting quite a few students from City College in that as well, and they were, you know, really talented people, and that was a great show. And we did another show, and I can't remember the name of that. At any rate, it was a show that involved surrealistic art, and it was a pretty big hit. But as time went on, we got so many members that we really couldn't devote a month to somebody else's show. The members wanted their things up sure. and showing, and so we sort of stopped doing that.
Okay. So at its zenith, you had, what, like 15?
At one point, we had 15 members, yes. That was before the recession.
And what does it drop down to now?
I think we have 8 right now.
8. So that's really below the threshold that allows it to be self-sustaining.
Yes.
Even though you are renting out those other
right,
spaces,
right.
You can't cover the rent.
We dig in our pocket.
Well, I'm saying.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I took on the responsibility, so we don't have enough members. I pay
right.
that extra amount.
Well, and that's not insignificant either.
Well, it adds up. That's for sure.
Sure.
And it's. You know, it's something I was willing to do for a period of time, but it gets to the point where you just can't continue doing that.
Right.
Plus, after 12 years, we'd like to do some other things. You know, I showed you my new trailer that we got. We really are anxious to do some traveling,
right.
Seeing California and the rest of the United States, really. And it's just, when you have that show once a month, that second Saturday show once a month, you prepare for it all month long, and then afterwards you kind of relax for a while, try to, and then all of a sudden it comes up again. And it's just a responsibility that we don't want to continue doing.
Right, right. Now, you mentioned investing in some property at the very beginning of the conception of the Arts District and artist lofts, and I was just going to ask you about that a little bit, if that's okay. How did that work out? I mean, the idea was to redevelop sort of adaptive reuse, would you say?
Right, exactly. We found an old building on 7th Street that was an automotive repair shop called Jet Carburetor, and we liked the name Jet, so we stuck with Jet Studios, and we were able to divide that space into 4 approximately 1,200 square foot spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And we rent them out for about the cost. It's after, now we've had it for some years, we're beginning to show a little bit of a profit.
Mm-hmm. But you're actually able to have artists who live and work in
those? Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. And they have to be artists.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the provisions, that they have to be artists to live in a live work studio.
Okay.
And they have to have a certain income. It can't be much higher. I can't remember the exact numbers, but it's around $44,000. If they make a lot more than that, they're not allowed to stay there. They need to move on to new mm-hmm. new digs. And if they make very much less than that, it looks on paper like they can't really afford to do it, so we're not allowed to take them.
And so that's a building that you own?
I own it with Phil Appleby and Pat Paris Appleby.
Okay. And are there other artist live workspaces in the...
There's another one right next to it, and that's the Peterson Lofts. Mm-hmm. And they're approximately... We have four spaces in our building, and then next door, I think there's about eight spaces.
Are those artist live workspaces too?
Well, they originally were. Now I don't think that they have the same requirements as far as having artists live in them, but the spaces lend themselves to artists, so sure. I would assume that most of the people there are artists.
Okay.
And then Peterson owns some other lofts on Alameda Street.
Okay.
And I don't know how many exactly.
Well, so now, over the years, the gallery, you and the people that are participating in the gallery, have been pretty ambitious and tried to do a lot of different things, not the least of which is the monthly second Saturday.
Exactly.
But a number of other things along the way. And I was just wondering, you know, what have you found to be the challenges and opportunities of doing business as a gallery in the city, in the East Village? I mean, generally speaking.
Challenges? Well, there's a lot of challenges. We pay a business license of $700 a year.
Mm-hmm.
People in Signal Hill pay about $60 a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's...
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I'm just turning this off. I'm just turning this off right now. Okay, there it goes.
So...
Okay, so
that's a challenge.
You have a business license of $60 a year in Signal Hill, and $700.
Right.
That's almost
half of it goes to the city. The other half goes to the DLBA, the Businessmen's Association in downtown.
But they provide some value, don't they?
They provide some services. Yes, they do.
Do you feel like you got your money's worth out of that?
No, not really.
What would you have done with that money had you not?
Well, we probably would have put on more events ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
One of the key events we put on was a Halloween event, and it was spectacular. And the next year, the DLBA decided they wanted to do it, and it's never been done since.
Well, what else? I mean, I know that there's been some. There's been a lot of controversy about the second Saturday over the years. I know that it started out a really small, kind of little homegrown thing.
Well, yes, it started out really just an art walk, just going from gallery to gallery. We tried to coordinate openings so that they would all happen on second Saturday. And we just invited people to come down on second Saturday and go for an art walk. It was a nice, cheap Saturday.
Yeah.
And... Then we expanded that. We closed Linden Avenue from First Street to Broadway, and that was very popular. And then there was some problems a few years back as to who really owned Second Saturday, and we took ownership of it. We artists, and now it's just about back to where it was.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to have problems like that. It takes a while for people to realize exactly what's going on, and it seems as though now they have, judging by the last few Second Saturdays. We've had great crowds, and we've sold out on our booths, and it really has been quite successful.
And another component just added recently, within the last... I want to say 6 months, maybe, is the farmer's market, right?
Yes.
That's a weekly thing.
That's a weekly thing. So far, it hasn't been doing that well. And why, I'm not really sure. But it started out with a bang, but, you know, it was during the fires last fall. And the opening day, there was ashes falling on the vendors and the people that came to the market, and
sort of symbolic in a way.
I mean there was just kind of one disaster after another, and it really, they didn't get off to a good start. It was probably a bad time for them to begin, and So in the last few months, it's dwindled down to just a very small farmer's market.
Oh.
And what's going to happen with that, I don't know.
Well, I hope they can find a way to reinvigorate it, because
yes.
I'm a big fan of farmers markets.
Oh, yeah, it's great, and it's really a good market. You know, the vendors that come all have organic produce, and it's really good. It's really good. And then there's some little traveling restaurants that come with it, and they're pretty good, too. It's just the vendors, if you don't get the participation of the local community, the vendors will go to another market because they just can't sell enough. And so it has dwindled. And hopefully we can get people educated to start going to that farmer's market. It's a little jewel, and it should be taken advantage of.
Yes, definitely. Now, let me go back for a second to what you were talking about as far as your business license fee, and that there's a special name for that additional fee that goes to the DLBA. I forget what it's called right now. But
I'm not sure if I remember either.
But do you think that, rather than necessarily eliminating it entirely, do you think that there's a better or a potentially better way of calculating that amount of money?
I think, personally, that the East Village should have its own business district.
Oh, separate from
the
downtown?
I don't think we should drop away from the DLBA, but I think artists have a better idea of how to market their wares than most businessmen do.
Well, I mean, but what about doing it based on, tax receipts, or based on earnings?
And that's a thought,
Because that way it wouldn't be this arbitrary kind of, you're here, this is what you have to pay. Instead, it could be much more a percentage.
Some sort of a sliding scale.
Yeah, so that if you're actually making, $150,000 a year in net sales, $700 or $500, $300, whatever it is, isn't that big a deal.
That's not a bad idea.
If you're making $5,000 a year in sales, and the community itself recognizes that having the gallery there is intrinsically valuable, don't you think that...
That would certainly help.
I mean,
that's a small piece.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of other things, and one of the big things is the customer base. Mm-hmm. Getting people down there.
Sure.
It is very difficult. During the week, the sidewalks are empty.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had very little help in getting people down there. Until recently, the DLBA has stepped forward, and they've helped sponsor some events, University by the Sea, some other events.
Oh, and Summer of Music.
They've really put a focus on the sound walk mm-hmm. and other things. I don't know how much they sponsor that, but I know that they have sponsored these other things.
Mm-hmm.
And it does bring people down. But still, during the week, when it's not an event, the town is empty.
Mm-hmm.
And something has to be done about
that. Well, what do you think can be done? I mean, why do you think that people don't see? I mean, because if you go to Pine, there's people on Pine during the week. People are going to the restaurants there. People are going to,
To a certain extent, but Pine's not very successful either. Mm-hmm. If you've been down there lately, we were at Palos Verdes Friday night and came home on PCH and went down Pine from Pacific Coast Highway. And, boy, it's a ghost town. It's a ghost town until you get to about 3rd Street.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a Friday night at kind of the peak hour, mm-hmm. and there wasn't very many people there. And there's a lot of empty storefronts. At least in the East Village, there's very few empty storefronts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But bringing people down, it's a perception, I think, of a lot of people that it's a dangerous area, where it really is not.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very safe area now. But there's still that perception there, I think.
Right. And a lot of people express concern about parking, but there actually is quite a bit of parking.
There's really a lot of parking. It's not difficult. You can't necessarily park right in front of the place that you want to shop at, mm-hmm. but you can park within a block or two,
sure.
usually. it's never a problem.
Right. And like even walking from the shopping center parking lot to the East Village, just like three blocks.
Yeah, it's possible. And there's a there's a lot on 3rd Street and Elm that is open for, and at least it's open for second Saturdays and for most events. And so event-wise, there's never really a problem for parking. That I don't believe that lot is open during the week, though. Mm-hmm. And but you know, during the week there's no problem because there's no customers.
Right. So what other opportunities do you, I mean, what else would, do you think would help to make the Arts District as a concept more of a reality?
Well, you know, when we started the Arts Council, and then at that time the Public Corporation for the Arts, they really took us under their wing. And they helped with a lot of advertising, a lot of free mailers, and in helping to organize events as well. Mm-hmm. And that went for about 3 years, and things really were doing really well. Mm-hmm. And then they changed their direction. Mm-hmm. And they basically, they moved out of the East Village, and they really kind of forgot about us. Mm-hmm. And it's, we don't have a leader per se. We don't have anybody that says, well, you're going to do this or you're going to do that. It's all been just a group of retail businesses, galleries, small shops and things, who try to get things going. But it's difficult without the leadership of an arts council.
Well, and you know, even though the Arts Council has now a new part-time executive director, Craig Watson, they just found out that their budget was cut by half,
exactly,
at least.
And that's just, you know, that makes it just that much worse.
So, I mean, you know, I think that there's, I guess what I'm trying to get to is that at some point, the people within the East District will have to stop looking outside for leadership or for guidance or support and actually, you know, just do it themselves in a way, I guess.
And I think that's kind of what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, they there's a lot of pressure has been put on the DLBA to help with events and things like that, and they're beginning to do that, and the Redevelopment Agency is doing some things to help, but now they're having $30 million taken out of their set-aside budget, so who knows what they'll be able to do.
I just got an email from John Thomas. I don't know if you're aware of who he is.
Yes.
Yeah, he's on the board of the RDA, and I asked him specifically about the Art Exchange project and if this budget cut or this budget expenditure that they would announced the other day would affect that project, and he said he didn't think so.
That's what I have heard. You know, I talked to you yesterday, and you were asking me about that, and so I've asked around a little bit, and it sounds like it's going to be on the menu.
Right.
Hopefully.
So yeah, that's another question, though.
I hate to see projects start and then end with all this vacant land when there was viable businesses there, and they knocked those businesses out in their wisdom.
Well, that's the hard thing. Is that
there's a vacant lot.
That process started a couple of years ago.
Exactly.
Well before this crash, this economic,
of course, yeah,
catastrophe that's taken place. You know, I mean, the vision for that development was very, very different than what they're suggesting now.
Oh my, yes.
It was going to be a multi-story residential with some commercial at the bottom, and part of that commercial was going to be used for the Art Exchange. That model has
changed totally.
It's gone away.
You know, I don't know totally what's going to become of the Art Exchange or what it really is going to be. I guess it's kind of like Obama's health care. People don't really know what it's going to be, and so a lot of people are apprehensive.
Sure.
You know, I hope for the best. You know, anything that we can do down there, I know is going to be an improvement to the area.
Well, that was actually what I was kind of getting to, is that, you know, Phil has said and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but if I remember correctly, he was saying that the whole concept for the Art Exchange was as an anchor, as like a business anchor for the larger arts district. And this idea that with an anchor, there would be more stability, there would be more energy and marketability and a focus drawn to the area as a whole, as a destination. And I was just wondering, do you see that optimistically? Do you see that pragmatically? How do you think that's going to unfold?
Well, you know, since I don't really know how they're going to operate it, if they're strictly thinking of it in terms of a tourist attraction, I don't think it'll be successful. Mm-hmm. I think it needs other components.
Well, I think the plan, basically, if I understand it correctly, is that there's going to be artist workspace, studio space,
right?
And there's going to be some high heat equipment that they can use for metal, glass, and ceramic. There's going to be an education component. There's going to be an administrative component, and there's going to be an exhibition component. And so that's the model that I've sort of seen outlined. I'm not exactly sure the number of workspaces that they're talking about.
Nor am I.
I think I've heard like somewhere between 12 and 17 or 20, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. Not a huge number, but somewhere in the maybe 12 to 15, if I remember correctly. And, you know, so I think the idea, though, is that this sort of high heat concept for the media will create a certain amount of excitement, you know.
Well, for sure there'll be some buzz, you know, when it starts. It's a matter of over the long haul whether it can sustain itself or not.
Right. Well, the one advantage that they have, from what I understand, is their rent will be very low.
Yes, and that's you know, that's really great that the rents will be low. However, people who are paying normal rent kind of
well, the rent for the organization, if I understand it correctly, will be $1 a year for the building.
That'll be through the redevelopment agency.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. So the RDA will own the building. They'll lease it to the 501c3 that will administer the building. They'll pay $1 a year. And the artists themselves who rent the studio space, they'll pay whatever the market rate is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, hopefully that will sustain it. It's an interesting idea. I still haven't seen all the working drawings.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I have worked in spaces where the public could look at me.
Uh-huh.
I hated it.
So you're not a performance artist?
I am not a performance artist. You know, I thought that I would really like that, and I found out that I hated it. You know, I have spent a lot of time developing my own little studio so that I don't have to do that. And, I know some artists thrive under that. It's just not something that I would want to do.
Right. Well, I guess, you know, it's a sort of a trade-off, because the idea is that in addition to seeing your work in an exhibition space, people can actually see the work in development and kind of get connected with it.
There's no doubt about it. You know, to watch glass blowing, to watch bronze casting, any of those things is really exciting. Mm-hmm. And, people look at finished products and have no idea really how they're made. And to actually see the color of the flames and to see the molten metal being poured into a cast is really something.
Sure.
And then have that cast broken away, and there it is, a piece of bronze. It's an amazing thing.
Well, but I think it's also true, I think the same is true of woodworking, too. I think that a lot of people see a chair and they have no understanding of how that's functional thing actually came to be, if it was all carved or it was bent or,
a
combination of the two, you know. And I think that for a lot of people, you know, that kind of, and even painting for that matter. You know, my wife is a painter, and I sometimes watch her paint, and I'm like, how the heck does she do that?
That's right. I got my inspiration for woodworking from Sam Maloof. Sam Maloof was one of the premier furniture makers in the United States. He died about 2 months ago. at 93, I believe, and worked up until the last few months just before he died. And he was a national treasure. There was just nothing like him. And he was my original influence. I met him at Claremont College at a crafts demonstration, and I watched him work. And, you know, my father had been a carpenter, so I understood about woodworking, but I never saw woodworking like that before.
As an art.
As an art, indeed. And it just it rung a bell in my head that, you know, maybe I could do something like that. I certainly never achieved the excellence of Sam Maloof, but he was definitely an inspiration in my life.
You know, I know that there's a lot of questions in the community about, you know, the future of the district as a concept, well, even the validity of the district as a concept. You know, a lot of people that I talk to remember how it was before this all happened.
Uh-huh.
And like you said, it was kind of a sketchy area. But that's what allowed artists to live and work there somewhat true. Illegally. You know, they were renting
true.
Out storefronts and building little,
well,
little,
you know, when,
bedrooms
when,
for themselves.
When we formed the Arts District, this property could be had very inexpensively.
Right.
I mean, if you had access to $25,000, you could buy yourself a pretty nice little house or a pretty nice little building.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was, you know, being older than most of the artists in the area, that was one of the things I advocated, was, you know, get yourself a piece of this before it goes out of sight. Well, I mean, I knew prices were going to go up. I could not have possibly imagined that they would go up like they did.
Right.
Nobody could have.
Right.
And I don't think the founding of the Arts District, nobody had any idea that prices were going to go like they did. And it drove a lot of people out. They just couldn't afford it.
Right.
And the artist live work lofts that were scheduled never really happened.
Yeah. And why do you think that is?
I'm not exactly sure. It was too expensive for an individual to go in and convert spaces to artist live work lofts. So you had to have some kind of help. And that help dried up. And why exactly, you know, I'm not sure. But I think it was the downfall of the East Village. We really needed those artist live work lofts.
Right.
That would have made a huge difference in the development of the district.
Sure. And but the process of actually acquiring that property, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding was that there were a lot of properties that were either disused, empty, privately mm-hmm. owned. The RDA came and bought them all up, is that correct? And then sold them to people that were interested in developing
them? No, not really. You know, we found our piece of property.
Directly?
Directly.
I see.
And then made the proposal. Ours was one of the first artist live work lofts.
So, but you could have done anything with it within the zoning rules, right?
Well, and that was the key. They changed the regulations as to what a person could live in mm-hmm. and what a person could not live in.
Mm-hmm.
And they made the regulations much, much simpler. There are certain caveats that, though, like you can't have children in those places, and there's some price limits, so there is really like a rent control that goes on.
Oh.
And but it's a fair rent control. I think it's fair for the artists, and it's fair for the investors.
So that's set in like the zoning rules.
That's set in however you get your financing. It's very difficult to take like a big old empty building and get the financing to do the construction work that you need to do. So housing came to the rescue, and they helped do the financing on that. So it was like a loan through housing as opposed to going to your local F&M bank.
I see.
F&M didn't understand what you
right.
anything about that.
Sure.
But housing did. They thought that was a good use for these older buildings that really had fallen into disrepair.
So how do you see the future? I mean, I understand that you still live here and,
sure.
and you still work here, and you know, you're disconnecting yourself from the gallery because, like you said, it's becoming less self-sustainable. But what do you see for the future of the East Village and for the success of this vision, with or without the Art Exchange as an anchor?
Well, you know, this is a nice area. We're close to the ocean, and there's a lot of houses that haven't been screwed with, you know, that are in nice shape, that are worth restoring. Whether artists, in fact, will be doing that, or whether it'll be people who want to live in an urban environment like this, you know, I think it's going to be a mix. I don't think it's going to be as strong of an arts district as we had originally planned or hoped. That's kind of how I see it. Like, we're over here in the St. Anthony district. It's about maybe 6 blocks from the little retail area. And most of the people over here don't even know we're in an arts district. They don't have a clue.
But, I mean, do you see... I mean, one of the things that a lot of people sort of talk about is there's this incredible economic pressure toward gentrification.
Right.
And, you know, some people see this as an inevitability, but it's not always an inevitability if the community gets together and says, there's things about what we have here that we want to preserve. And we want to preserve the ethnic, social, economic, cultural mix of a neighborhood. And one of the ways to do that is to control the growth of property expenses.
Absolutely.
And things like that. So, I mean, where do you fall on the fence there? I mean, do you feel like that economic realities should just have full sway? And, you know,
no, I don't.
10 years down the road,
I don't. But you know, I think it does. I think it should be that way, but that's the way it is.
Because conceivably, you know, 10 years down the road, the Arts District could be, you know, converted to multi-story condo and apartment buildings.
That might very well happen. However, this little recession has brought things kind of to a halt.
Sure.
And I think maybe a lot of things are going to be rethought before they begin again. You know, I've watched that happen twice now. Mm-hmm. I bought this building that we live in 1978, and we were lured in by the renaissance of downtown Long Beach when they tore down several blocks of Long Beach and put up Murder Mall. That was a bit of a disappointment. So then the people in their wisdom tore it down. You know, I don't know how many billions of dollars that cost, but they tore that down and they built what we have now. And it doesn't seem to be any better than what they tore down. And it sure isn't as good as what we had originally. You know, there was a Sears, a multi-level, 11-story Sears building here. Mm-hmm. And Sears was basically pushed out, and the property sat empty for 12 years or longer. Long Beach does some strange things.
Well, I guess that's why I'm kind of asking, is because, you know, they're in the midst of the 2030 plan right now, and that's a land use plan more than anything. You know?
Right, right.
You know, I'm just wondering, you know, we have this, there's this idea, which is the Arts District, you know, and then there's the reality, which is this is a beautiful area right near the water, and you can see luxury townhouses, multi-story, looking over the water and being close to the symphony and all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it would be a very different place if that were to happen. And so I'm just wondering, you know, is it worth preserving this idea?
And, oh, you know, absolutely.
What is the strength of that idea? I mean, to make it worth preserving. You know,
I think it's definitely worth preserving. You know, and I would hope that the city would really get behind it.
Well, has it so far?
No, not really. No. Once they got Walmart built, I think they sort of sat back on their haunches.
Are we here?
Polished their fingernails and lit up a cigar.
Well, you know, I mean, honestly, I think that you go someplace. Have you ever been to the Museum of Glass in Tacoma?
No, I haven't.
Oh, if you ever get a chance to go, I highly recommend it. It's in a really sort of industrial area.
Uh-huh.
Of Tacoma. It's right on the water. but it's you walk around and it's not like it's really industrial. And the building is gorgeous, and maybe even Frank Gehry designed, I'm not sure. They have a theater, and it's sort of like bleacher seats in a half circle around the hot working area. And when they open the kilns for the glass, you can feel that heat just blasting at you, and you can sit and watch the people from all over the world come and work there, and it's a wonderful experience, you know.
Oh, for sure.
And I know there's other places that are sort of like that, and mm-hmm. you know, we have the aquarium, which is like a little gem, you know, and sort of the Harvard area, but I think that ultimately, my fear is that economic reality is, that's what I always go back to, unless we have a strong, clear vision and communicate it in an effective way.
And I don't think that exists right now.
Right. So, I mean, that's the question is, you have this document that you guys created 12 years ago or 10
longer,
years ago.
You know, longer than that. It's time to renew it. It needs...
Well, where is it?
Well... A lot of the things were instituted. Most of the infrastructure was not. Mm-hmm. You know, it called for bulb outs or turn-ins on most of the corners. One of the things that we really stressed was anything that was going to be done in the East Village, artists should have a part in it. Well, that kind of got forgotten about.
So, but where is this document? I mean, is it available? Do you have a copy?
I have a copy, yeah.
I'd love to get a copy.
Okay, I can show it to you. It's my only copy.
Can I make a copy?
Certainly.
Okay.
Certainly.
Because, I mean, it should be available for the public to look
Absolutely,
at.
Absolutely,
yeah. And, you know, there's nothing to replace it. I don't think it's expired, has it?
No, it hasn't expired. I think it's in need of updating, mm-hmm. frankly, because things have changed.
Sure.
A lot has changed. And it needs to be updated. And it was, you know, it was a thing that was put together by the community. Mm-hmm. That community has changed considerably. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things don't last forever. And things that we thought would be a good idea, a lot of those things have come to fruition. You know, sidewalk cafes, just a nice ambiance in the area.
Well, yeah, I mean, like Utopia, for example.
Exactly,
really
exactly.
Been an up-leveling.
Oh, yes, and that's brought in other little restaurants. Mm-hmm. The one thing that we've lost is art galleries.
Sure.
Because it's so expensive to rent a space where you don't have any sales.
Right.
It just becomes almost impossible. You know, I think some kind of a municipal art gallery would probably be a really good thing.
Yeah, that's something that Cameron's advocated for a long time.
Yeah, and, you know, like with our gallery, you know, my dream was to make an art center out of it. Mm-hmm. We've been to the Palos Verdes Art Center many times. My daughter teaches there and helps them. And, you know, that's kind of the model that we based our thing on. But it... You know, you need help. They have lots of wealthy people who are members, who contribute.
And they understand the value.
And they understand the value. Like when we were there Friday night, you know, there was people in their 80s that were there who are longtime members. It's been in existence for 78 years. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful place. And they bring in fine art. They have classes there. They teach ceramics there. They have children's classes. My daughter teaches a number of children's classes there. They worked all summer teaching classes. And, you know, that's really what we wanted to do with our gallery. But the money just isn't there to do it. It's just a very difficult thing. And hopefully, you know, if somebody takes it over, they'll be able to do something like that.
So, well, yeah, what do you think is going to happen with
Well, it's kind of up in the air at this point. There's members of the gallery that would like to stay, but it's a matter of finding somebody who's willing to take on the lease for that whole space. And it's let's see, it's $2,040 a month. And that's a big chunk to come up with every single month, particularly when sales are so bad.
Right.
You know, we have to depend totally on people being members in order to pay the rent.
Right.
And if you lose a few members, you're down on your rent.
Right.
So, you know, it probably needs to be restructured.
Let me ask you a question. This is another question. Why is the rent so high? What justifies that rent?
It actually is kind of low compared to other places. I think it's $1.25 a square foot, and that's actually low.
Okay. But, I mean, you know, there are empty storefronts.
No, but not that many.
Really?
Not that many.
I mean, I know Kuz is still empty. I know
Kuz is empty, but it's a huge space.
The kitchen where Open was, that's still empty, right?
Yes.
That's still open.
And that's a space that, you know, needs lots of work, and it's a large space. And they get a considerable amount per square foot.
And the gallery that was right next to Open, that's also still empty, right?
Yes, and that's smaller than our area, and I think the rent is around $2,100 for that. And, you know, the person that owns it, they're holding out for it. But
I mean, wouldn't it be better for the neighborhood?
Of course.
To have lower rent?
Of course.
And occupancy?
Of course.
You know,
it would be better,
I mean,
for all of downtown Long Beach.
Wouldn't it be better if arts-related businesses got some sort of relief?
Yes.
Either from a tax burden or fee burdens?
Yeah.
You know, these are things that the city can do without spending a penny.
Exactly.
And it wouldn't impact their budget significantly.
Exactly.
But it would make.
Yeah, it's. I just don't see a will there. There's just. And the art community is so kind of fragmented that they don't have a real lobbying force to get something like that to happen.
Yeah, that's going to change.
Well, I hope.
That's going to change.
I hope that changes. And, you know, if people, you know, people have to fall in love with this. You know, it has to become their passion.
Well.
And they have to see that an area is worth really going the extra mile for. And so many people, you know, when they can't afford the rent, they leave and they go somewhere else, and that's the end of it.
Sure.
And, of course, once again, that's the difference between renters and property owners. One of the reasons I've always pushed for people to buy a piece of property when they can do it is because then you're buying into the community, and you're part of the community. And if things start to go bad, you're going to fight to get it better. If you're just a renter and it gets bad, you leave.
Right.
And it's very difficult to build that kind of strength with just simply renters.
So is there another part of the city that might be better suited for an art gallery, a community or a co-op art gallery? Is there another area of the city that where the rent would be less or where there's more foot traffic?
Belmont Shore is where all the traffic is.
Mm-hmm. But the rents are higher.
But the rents are higher, and you don't see very many galleries down there.
No.
And if you do, they don't last long.
Right.
It's a tough sell.
Sure.
Tough sell in Long Beach, tough sell in Southern California, really.
Sure. Which is why I think, you know, this is what I was going back to before, just this idea that if the community recognizes the value of something and agrees that it's worth preserving or protecting or nurturing,
mm-hmm.
then that's something that the city should be willing to hear.
I definitely think so. And I think maybe the redevelopment agency is becoming aware that this is sort of a valuable little piece of property and that they should be doing something to help preserve it. That's the feeling I get. I haven't seen that much concrete come from it at this point. You know, and I know they've got their problems, so everybody's got problems. But just like people preserving a historical district, this is a district that's worth preserving and doing something with. And, you know, prices will go up. I know that they will. You can't put a lid on the cost of a house. But, you know, I'd like to see artists living here and succeeding here so they could afford to buy a house, and maybe they could buy a better house and studio in the Arts District. Mm-hmm. because they're successful, because they're in the Arts District.
Right.
You know, having lots of artists in the Arts District is what's going to make it successful. And that's, you know, when they can't afford the rent and they can't afford to buy anything, how are they going to be here?
They're not.
If they're not, it's just that simple. And there's, you know, surprisingly, there is quite a few artists in here. Well, there's a lot of artists, actually. A lot of them are, you know, just keep to themselves. And you wouldn't even know they were here. But, you know, I walk my dog all over the place. And, you know, I find artists in places you would never imagine. You wouldn't believe that he walked very much.
Well, thank you, Larry. I really appreciate
Certainly.
I really appreciate not only your time today, but all of your hard work.
Well,
you've had a vision.
I really believe in this. You know, I really think it's a worthwhile thing. You know, my daughter is a perfect example of what an arts district can do. She was able to get little jobs doing things, painting gear switch boxes, being involved in Halloween events, on and on. And all of that gave her a chance to display her work, to become confident in what she was doing. And when we get finished, I'll take you downstairs. You can see the murals that she's working on for Hawaiian Avenue over in Wilmington.
Great.
It's 5 3x5 panels, so it'll be 15 feet long. And this has all been done by fifth graders.
Oh, that's great.
And it's just exquisite.
Wonderful. Well, thank you.
Certainly.